Good morning. This is number 11 in a series of audio explorations into the campaign of a particular individual in Cork in Ireland to get elected to the Irish Parliament. His name is John Gilroy, and he's sitting here beside me, and I'm going to find out a little bit more about John's campaign for election. Good morning, John.
Morning, Paul.
John, look, there's one thing that's been happening in Ireland all over the last couple of days, and we can't avoid it, right? It's a whole lot of political shenanigans, all sorts of manoeuvres by all sorts of people. But rather than go into the details of it, I'd like to know, you as a candidate for election in Cork North Central, is all this comings and goings helping or hindering your campaign?
Yeah, Paul, that's a good question now, and there's many facets to it. First of all, it's much more than just political shenanigans. It's political chaos, as far as I can see. It's very damaging to the body politic, the nonsense that's going on at the moment. We have seen all sorts of strategies been put in place by the current government, really to hold on to power for as long as possible. The current government knows their game is over, and they're dragging this out as long as they can. But the way they're doing it, Paul, if the opposition were to write the script, or if their worst enemies were to write the script, they couldn't have written a better script. First, there was a political heave against the Taoiseach. It failed. The Taoiseach seemed safe. The following day, he was destroyed. He tried to reshuffle his cabinet. Couldn't do it. Greens now have pulled out of government. This gives rise, Paul, to a level of anger and annoyance that feeds into the general cynicism among the public of all politicians, and that has to be wrong, Paul. That has to be bad for politics, and anything that's bad for politics has to be bad for politicians. So in many ways, while you would be tempted to take some sort of schadenfreude from the government's misfortune and self-created misfortune, at the other level, Paul, anything that damages politicians certainly damages me as a politician.
And does it drive down the number of people who are likely to vote in the election? Is that one of the possible consequences, that some people will say to themselves, you know, a plague on all your houses, I might not even vote?
Hopefully not, Paul, but that's certainly the danger. They'd say all politicians are the same, and we're hearing that on the doorstep all the time. That I don't know, why should I vote for you? You're the same as the rest of them. Of course, I would argue passionately that I'm not the same as the rest of them, and that politicians, to a man and woman, enter politics from motives of public service. And somewhere along the way, Paul, it would appear, and I think it is only an appearance, that gets lost somewhere. But myself, I mean, I don't consider myself to be a politician in that traditional sense at all. I haven't ever chased votes for the sake of chasing votes. I don't do the normal thing that politicians do, starting each morning looking at the newspaper to find out where funerals are so you can go to funerals. I don't attend funerals at all. I don't be chasing medical cards or planning permissions or generating this type of clientelism work. And I've been at that since 2004 when I was first elected. And during the life of that council, Paul, my political advisors and my political opponents were saying, John, you're not going to be re-elected because you're not doing the things that politicians traditionally and conventionally do. And I said, look, this is a decision I've made. I'm going to try and put the public interest at heart instead of any particular vested interest or personal interest at heart. And if the electorate want to reject me on that, so be it. So the best advice against me, Paul, if I can just finish this, I know I'm a bit long-winded this morning, but the best advice that was being given to me was, John, you've got to start acting like a politician. I resisted that. And in the local elections, Paul, of 2009, I achieved 4,538 votes, which put me the second highest vote in the country of any party and the highest Labour Party vote ever in the history of the state in local elections. So clearly, Paul, the formula that I'm working to has a market out there. People aren't as cynical as they're being portrayed to be, but the current chaos in the political system certainly doesn't help or inspire confidence in anybody.
Yeah, how are the Labour Party, and you in particular, going to get the message out there about what you stand for? I mean, if all the conversation is about Fianna Fáil and all about the fall of the government and whether this finance bill is going to be passed or not passed, what about the whole range of political issues about which you have opinions and you want to influence public opinion?
Well, Paul, in the there's that, and there's the modern media age as well, which means that you must make your policies very concise to be able to sell them in the media. And I suppose you might say we're living in the age of the soundbite. The Labour Party has been accused of having no policies constantly by our political opponents. But the reality of that, Paul, is that the Labour Party policies are complex and meaningful and workable, but you cannot explain how, like, for instance, our idea of a strategic investment bank. How could you explain that, Paul, in 30 seconds? And if you can't explain something in 30 seconds, people begin to turn off. But I can assure you that our policies are robust, well thought out, costed, and achievable. But trying to wrap them up into a soundbite doesn't do justice either to the people making the policies or indeed to the people listening to the policies being explained.
Now, you've just mentioned one about a national investment bank. Just let's try this now. Look, I mean, I know almost nothing about this national investment bank idea from the Labour Party. Pitch it to me.
Okay. Paul, the one thing that's going to get us out of this mess is jobs, and more jobs, okay? So to create jobs, we must invest in the indigenous economy, in supporting small businesses and stimulating our economy in a manner which creates intensive jobs, which are job intensive, okay?
Yes, I think I can follow that very easily.
So things like, we'll say, major road infrastructural projects, they are things that are useful in their own right, and they also create lots and lots of employment opportunities. We're talking about investing in a capital buildings programme for schools, another labour intensive, and the expertise is all out there. But where are we going to get the money for this, Paul? We can't borrow it abroad, our banks are not lending. So the Labour Party are saying we're going to create a strategic investment bank that will support local businesses and major infrastructural projects in Ireland. Now, we're taking €2 billion from the National Pension Reserve Fund, and that will act as a seed capital for the bank.
And if you were in government, you would have the power to take that money out of that fund, would you? The government is entitled to do that.
The government is entitled to do anything that's within the law, Paul, and that is within the law, the government can do that. But here's where it becomes complex. You would say that's a great idea, but it is a great idea, but it's more complex than that. €2 billion is not enough money to invest in the economy for any bank. So we have to borrow more money, Paul. On the capital markets. But the capital markets are not lending money to our banks or to our government. And that means we have to create another set of conditions whereby Ireland's financial stability, political stability, and all stabilities that we need in Ireland are put in place so that the lending interest rates in the international markets come down below 5.8%, which is ruining our country now, and that is the terms of the IMF and EU bailout. So you see how complex this is?
I do, and what strikes me about it is that, because it is so complex, is that the main message that people will be picking up is John Gilroy seems to have a good enough intellect for understanding these complex issues for me to trust him to go in and debate it on my behalf.
It's very kind of you to say so, Paul, but every politician should have an understanding at least of their own party policies, and certainly in the times we live in, you would be a foolish politician indeed to put yourself forward and not understand at least the basics of economics and the basics of how the political system works.
But what do you read now? Come on, where do you get your understanding? Are you a daily reader of the Financial Times? Do you read the business section of the newspapers? What do you do to inform yourself and keep your intellect on song?
Well, Paul, look, I mean, yes, I do all those things, of course, but it's hardly good enough to take your academic reading from the newspapers. Look, I have friends who are economists who I sit down with. I'm no expert, Paul, I'm no genius, but hopefully I'm clever enough to be able to understand when things are explained to me. I mean, I read wide and far. I speak to Labour Party people. Joan Burton and myself sit down on regular terms, on regular occasions, 5 times since Christmas now, to have discussions about the general state of the economy. So I'm not an economist, Paul, and I don't hold any academic qualification in finance at all.
Yeah, but you probably understand more about this than most people.
It's my business, Paul. It's my business. If I was to ask you about your business, you'd be able to tell me more than I would know about your business, we'd hope. This is, Paul, this is what you pay your politicians for.
Yeah, it's true. We just touched on one issue, you know, and it's a heck of a demanding thing to be able to have yourself informed across a range of issues. So what are the issues that you're working on at the moment to improve your understanding of them? Let's be realistic and say, you know, politicians have to work at understanding certain issues better. Well, what's the issue that you're working on most at the moment?
There's two issues, Paul, really. One issue that I feel extraordinarily passionate about is the idea of political reform, Paul. We touched on this in a previous interview. But unless we change the culture of politics as well as the structure of politics, we're not going to achieve anything. If we replace this current government with a Labour and Fine Gael government, unless we change the way business is done in politics, it's not going to make any difference. And this is the biggest challenge facing us. I spoke about the Strategic Investment Bank, Paul, and over the course of our interviews, we spoke about a lot of other things. We need to restore faith in politics. We need a politician, or all politicians, to be able to stand up and say something, whatever it is, that the general public don't automatically say, that's nonsense, he's telling lies. We need somebody, all politicians, to be able to stand up, and for the general public out there to at least listen and give the politician the benefit of the doubt that, okay, this guy has something to say. Instead of a culture fostered by 13 years of Fianna Fáil government, Paul, whereby they say all politicians are the same. We're not the same. Politicians, a new generation of politicians is needed, Paul. That's not to say that we can do without the corporate memory of an experience of the existing politicians, but unless we have a huge infusion of new blood into the next stall across all parties, Paul, the culture isn't going to change.
And I don't think you're going to change the culture in one dull term. You're going to have to be thinking about how you can get two or three dull terms in order to convince me, at least, and I'd say other people, that this thing about culture change in politics isn't just a cliche.
You're right there. We have had 90 years, Paul, of doing politics in a very clientelist type way here in this country. You're quite right. We will not change that over one term. We'd be lucky if we can change it over the course of a generation. But we must start somewhere, Paul. How do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. So we have to start somewhere, Paul. It's not good enough to say this can't happen. That is the language of despair. It can happen, Paul. It will happen. And if there's enough politicians fighting for it to happen, it will happen, Paul.
And you're going to need some really good alliances with other people, because you can't be a voice crying in the wilderness. You're going to have to build links with other good young politicians. Are you doing anything about this at the moment?
Of course we are, Paul. I mean, I'm working in Cork County Council now. I'm going to a meeting now in a minute. And in my own party and across other parties, there are fantastic people. Absolutely, I should name them. I suppose Tom Barry is a Fine Gael councillor in Mallow. Tom is a fantastic guy. Danny Crowley is a Fianna Fáil councillor in West Cork. Danny is superb. John Collins in Carrigaline is a Fine Gael councillor. These guys are bright, intelligent, hard-working, modern and enlightened, Paul. There's no...
And you actually talk to each other then?
Absolutely, of course.
Do you sit down and have a cup of coffee and chat about issues?
All the time. It's funny that Irish politics appears very confrontational, but and it is during election time. And when issues arise that where there's conflict, that's a good and healthy thing. But generally, you must take a fairly workman approach to achieving anything, Paul. And in Cork County Council, for instance, if I'm bringing forward something that I feel strongly about, the very first thing I do is try and generate a bit of support in advance of the meeting among all parties and none, and people of similar views as myself. That's prudent, it's sensible, it's pragmatic. If you don't do that, you can be as noble as you like, Paul, but you'll remain completely impotent.
Yeah, that sounds very wise. Okay, look, give us one last bit of news then, John. You said you were going off to a meeting this morning. What kind of a meeting are you going to today?
It's a meeting of the full council.
Full Cork County Council. How many people will be there?
Well, there's 48 councillors, so you'd hope that they'd all be there, but for one reason or another, there's generally somewhere 42 or 3 councillors there. These meetings, the full council meet on the second and fourth Monday of every month, and then there's a southern area meeting, which is a subdivision of the council, takes place on the third Monday of the month. Then there's the development meeting, takes place on the third Friday of the month. The development meeting is a meeting of the full council in camera, where The media
in camera, what does that mean?
The media and the general public are not allowed to attend this meeting, and this meeting is really a housekeeping meeting of the council, if you understand, of looking at our own policies and looking at things that might not be ready for general publication, perhaps because of commercial or other sensitivities around it. So they will be discussed in camera at the development meeting on the first Friday of fourth Friday of every month. Sorry.
And will you sit in on all this meeting, or will you just swan in and have a few words and get in the local paper and then swan out again? What's your practice?
My practice is to go to as many meetings as possible, Paul, and stay and contribute to every motion and every item on the agenda. Sometimes some of the things that are brought up, I have to admit, are mind-numbing in their banality and boredom. But it's important. These are important issues for somebody. Now, I have a real issue, and this is a whole another day's debate, Paul, another day's discussion, but I have a real issue generally about notices of motion being brought by councillors to the chamber for debate, because I suppose it's important in its own right that these things would be debated, but there seldom seems to be a hard outcome of any of these great topics that we debate. For instance, it generally ends up that we will agree to send a letter to the relevant department, and we send a letter to the relevant department and it comes back maybe 2 months later with a lot of old jargon and bureaucratic talk that will tell us nothing or add nothing to our debate. And I have a real worry about that, Paul. It's interesting and valuable in its own right to air things in public, but really, unless we can have some hard outcome at the end of it, I think we're wasting our time. And that adds to my argument all along that local government needs to be reformed, in as well as national government, and the structures of both need to be reformed. And here we are, back in the circle, Paul, again, of reform.
Okay, look, John Gilroy, that's a great note on which to finish. You're a reforming politician.
Well, I hope to be, Paul, I hope that the small contribution I've made to political reform in the last 7 years as a councillor has some meaning. I hope it has. I'm not sure it has it. But look, we must do what we can. And I am running my campaign with regard to this election on two principles. One is, as you can hear, about political reform. And I've also written a policy on community development, Paul, which has been adopted by the Labour Party. And it will be launched next week here in Cork. And perhaps we'll talk with that at the next interview.
Okay, that's a date. Okay, John Gilmore, thank you ever so much. Or John Gilroy, sorry, John Gilroy. Thank you ever so much for this.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks. We were long there, were we?
We were.
It was a good one, though. That was it, like 17.
We were long.
Yeah, but that was a very interesting one. See, when I get on a roll, Paul, there's no stopping me, is there?
Ah, look, it's good, though. I'm trying to turn this thing off.